So hi, I'm Phil Zembowitz. I'm a chemistry concentrator here at the college. I'm a junior, and I've been spending most of my time recently on computer science projects related to chemistry and biology. And today I'll be talking about processing, which is something that is, it's a Java-based language that's really useful for data visualization, art stuff, and it's just a general fun environment to play with. It's very kind of simple, and you can get really cool things going really easily. So, just my intro slide, this is an example of one of the things you can do in processing. And if you don't recognize it at first, it's kind of difficult. It's the London tube map. But instead of being organized geographically, it's organized by travel distance. So somebody made a processing application where you choose your station of origin, and it calculates the rest of the map based on travel distance rather than geographic distance. So just one example of the sort of power of this language to enable you to do things like this on a rather simple basis of programming knowledge. So this will be kind of a high-level overview of sort of how processing does its things and a few of the more interesting libraries that will enable you to get started. So the background of processing is it was developed, it's pretty recent. It started in 2001. In 2004, and until 2004 it was an MIT project. Now it's sort of like an open source environment for people to develop in. And it's based on Java, but it's designed for people who don't have, who don't want to spend that much time on actual, you know, coding of visual elements and coding of how things are displayed, and focus more on sort of design and art aspects of what they're doing. So you won't spend too much time doing things like, you know, creating classes to, you know, display sprites differently all over the screen. You can just kind of think about, okay, well, I want to make a really cool visualization that takes this data and makes, you know, lines with it or makes whatever with it. And you don't need to worry about the sort of low-level stuff. And it's open source, so if you ever feel like adding more things, you can definitely do that. And there's a huge range of libraries on the processing website that people have added to processing as itself. One thing that's difficult about processing is if you Google search for it, it's not as easy to get relevant results because processing is kind of a general term. So you have to be kind of clever with searching for things. But they have a really great website. First off, to download processing API, you should go to the first link here, processing.org/download. And it'll download the sort of development environment together with all of the source code you need to get started. And they also have two really great learning references. The first one is just called Learning, which is a sort of theme-organized way to learn about processing. And then the API reference is a function-organized way of learning about it. So this is the IDE, or the PDE. And there are just kind of like a few basic sort of terms and places you need to look here. First, I mean, just notice that it's very simple. It's a processing application is called a sketch because it's not supposed to be like a production level, you know, very polished, like rigorous, huge application. These are kind of things where you can just like code and come in without even having to save the file. You can get something working. So this is where you actually write all your code in. Now, tabs at the top represent classes. So these are sort of like individual wrappers for functions. If you're not familiar with Java, I'll sort of go over what a class is a little bit later. But basically, you have the main project tab, and then you can have particular smaller classes that represent other things you've created. So you can separate out your code in a more logical way instead of having it all in one place. As you see, the code is auto-colored, which is quite useful. If you type in a function, or some sort of processing constant or something like that, like string, you'll know that you've done it correctly because it will color it correctly. And it also assists you with doing bracketing and so forth. So you know, it kind of handles indentation and things like that for you, which is quite useful. This is your debug window. So when you're actually running your your program, messages will pop up here. And if you want to debug it in a very kind of like printf way, you can use this command called trace. And it'll actually print whatever you put inside of trace into this window. But it won't actually display it in your program. So this is really useful. And to actually get something going, you just press play here. And to stop it, you press stop. So that's the basic environment. And as you see, it's very simple compared to these, you know, Java IDEs like Eclipse or something like that. This is very straightforward, and I recommend using this. It's although it doesn't have some of the features of the more advanced IDEs, it's quite useful in and of itself. So there, in processing, you can create two different types of final product. You can create a Java web applet. So this will be one of those things where you go to the website, it shows the Java icon, it loads. It's a little bit slow, but it'll work pretty much on every computer. Java's enabled on all operating systems. So you just do file export and applet, and it'll create that web page for you. The other method is an executable file, sorry. So if you go to file export application, you can actually get an executable file that doesn't need the internet to run. So you can distribute it to your friends. But you have to make it OS specific. So you can create a Windows exe file, a Linux executable, or you know, the equivalent for Mac. I'm running Windows, so I've done the Windows one thus far. So processing is very, the syntax is very similar to C, and I don't think that you'll be too shocked when you start looking at this code about how things work. Every statement is followed by a semicolon. You know, functions have curly braces around them and so forth. But there are these two things that are unique to processing, and they are the setup and the draw functions. Now, you can think of setup as main in C. It's a function that's called as soon as the program opens. Setup is the first thing that's called. And it's very useful for setting things like setting parameters that will be generally used throughout your program, loading your data, things that need to be done once at the beginning. And one of the things that's pretty much in every single processing app, since processing is a visual programming language, is size. And size will specify what your actual size of your window is. And it takes three parameters. If you look in the reference, you'll see this. One is height, one is width. And then the third one, which is optional, is which renderer you use, which will come into play when we do 3D. And there are a bunch of other functions that are frequently done in setup, such as frame rate, sets how quickly your application updates. Background fills in the background with a certain color. And cursor or no cursor, kind of self-explanatory. Do you want the user to see their standard cursor when you run this? And the last function that's quite frequently done in setup is smooth. So if you call smooth, it'll do anti-aliasing on all of your drawings, which basically is, you know, computers can't really represent curves that effectively because they're pixels, right? And you have to kind of do a best guess. So anti-aliasing kind of tries to smooth those edges to make them look better to us. Now, the other function that's present in all processing apps is called draw. And this is what actually outputs your code or whatever your code generates to the window. And usually it's called repeatedly once setup is done executing. So setup will run, and then draw will sort of go over and over and over again at the frame rate times per second. Now, if you don't specify a frame rate, this is 60 frames per second, or as close to 60 frames per second as it can get. So if you have very data intensive or processing intensive applications, it might slow down. So that's something to consider. And you can also have draw with this, inside of draw, if you ever call the function loop, if you call no loop, it'll prevent this redrawing from occurring. So you can imagine some applications such as, you know, when you're displaying static charts and things like that, you might want the visualization to update when you click a button or when you load something. But you don't want it to happen all the time. So this is a good way to toggle whether or not you're actually updating your output or not. So the two main important differences between something like C and something like processing is that you have a setup and draw. Those are your main functions instead of main. So since processing is very visual-based, it's important to get a grasp of how you actually display things in the program. So the coordinate system is, at first kind of seems silly, but you got used to it really quickly, is x goes like this, and y increases as you go down. So we're used to thinking of x increasing and y going up for math class, but it's just basically the same thing, but inverted. And so in processing, you can specify any coordinate, really. It doesn't even have to be inside your size, which is something to consider. For example, if I want to draw a rectangle that starts way out here and then sort of, you know, moves across the whole screen, I can do that kind of thing and not have to worry about specifying out of bounds or so forth. The processing code will actually only draw or only even do the math for pixels that are actually within your size. So that's why it's important to specify size right at the beginning. So one of the main things that you'll be interested in when working with processing is setting colors. They let you emphasize particular data or, you know, make things really neat. So there are a few steps to setting a color on a particular for a particular object. So the first thing you need to do is specify which way you will set the color. And then you can actually set the color for particular types of drawing. So for example, you can set what objects are filled with fill, or you can set what the stroke around objects is with stroke. Now, because we're redrawing this this output 60 times per second, the way that color and stuff is done is you set these parameters, right? And you have a sort of a setting that's created for a particular color. And then you draw some things in that color. And then you set the color to something else, for example. And then you output a few more things in that other color, and so forth. So I'll show some examples of this in actual code later. But the way that these things are executed is if you draw a rectangle or something, it's not an actual object. It's just something that's been spit out onto the screen with these particular settings having been set earlier. So we'll go through some examples of that as soon as I show drawing, which is next. So the simplest method of drawing is just called set. And this is the power of processing, is you can actually go to an individual pixel on the screen and change it to whatever color you want. There's another function called point, which just sets it to black. But with set, you can actually set a particular color. So let me just show a quick example of an application that uses this. So this application will run Conway's Game of Life, which is a simulation of, it's like an evolutionary simulation based on very simple rules. And basically, there's just a rule where you have a pixel, and it's surrounded by 8 different pixels. And the rule is if there are 3 or more, you stay black. And if there are less than 3, then you turn white. And it just evolves like that. So if we just go through this code to sort of reiterate some of the things I've mentioned before. So in our setup function, first we declare some global variables, just in the same way that C, if you declare variables outside of a function, they will be accessible to all functions. And then we have setup. So we set size, we set frame rate. And when you set size, you automatically create these variables called width and height, which are global variables that any function can access. And you can use those as you please. So if you want to put something in the middle, you just, you know, size over 2, I mean, width over 2 and height over 2, and you can actually specify the middle there. One thing to note is that arrays in processing are objects. So it's not in the same way that in C arrays are actually in memory and is just like a list of particular values, right? But in processing, they're thought of as objects. So if you declare a new array, in this case world, right? And we want to declare a new instance of that array object. So it's a 3-dimensional array. So we want a new 3-dimensional array with these sizes. And the advantages of something like that are it's zeroed at first. Like, we don't have to loop through and set everything to zero. And that's basically, and then what this actually does is sets random cells within that array to one. So there's a system that's been created where if one of these entries is one, that means the cell is on. Otherwise, it's off. But I'm going to skip over some of the more complicated things. Basically, these functions just go through all of the neighbors and return a sum of how many of the neighbors are on. But the most important part of this whole draw function, which is what we're seeing right now, is at the very beginning, the background is set to black. So basically, every time the draw function is called, it just blacks everything out. So the first thing that's spit out is you take a bucket of paint and you drop it on your image, and it's completely black. And then you actually go through, and this part goes through and calculates which cells actually need to be changed, which pixels actually need to be changed, and so forth. But the interesting actual drawing part occurs right here. So if the pixel is set to be drawn, it actually does the set function, right? And it sets it to a different color. So the point of this, you actually see with not too much code, we can actually do this whole simulation of evolution, right? Where we have a black background being drawn every time. And then for each one of these frames, for each one of these changes in the draw function, we go through the whole array of pixels. That two-dimensional array object we declared, right? We calculate based on the number of neighbors whether or not it should be turned on or turned off. And then using set, we set individual pixels white based on that. So with these kind of techniques of using arrays, using set, and using things like that, we can create very complex things that follow patterns like this. So I'll go back to the actual presentation and show you how to draw more complicated things. So I hope that by this point you understand the sort of drawing order, where processing is not, it gives you the, oops, go away. What's going on? Sorry about that. So processing isn't like you create an object and then you kind of don't worry about it. You have to continuously think about how is this going to be updated? How am I going to change whether or not, whether it's the color or the size or the location of what I'm going to print? So another thing you can do is just create a line. There's a ton of functions that just create particular kind of primitives. So there's a line function, there's a rectangle function, and so forth. But another thing that's important to understand in processing is translate. So when you're going through this draw cycle, sometimes it doesn't make sense to refer to particular pixels based off of the origin. So the origin at the beginning, as I mentioned, you start by, this is 0, 0. This is your width and your height point. But sometimes it makes more sense, for example, if you want to create a rotated rectangle or some sort of, crazier thing, you can actually change the axes with which you draw. So because we're redrawing on each draw cycle, we can actually, using translate, move the origin to a different place in the drawing. So for example, if you wanted to create a rectangle that just moved across the screen, the way we do that, there's many ways you could do that. You could, for example, for each draw cycle, first black the background, so background 0, right? And then sort of draw a rectangle and then just increase the variables for rectangle's coordinates as draw loops, right? But another way you could do it, which will be much more useful when you do things like 3D and so forth, is by using translate, which will actually move the origins. And then you can just call the same, draw a rectangle starting at the origin of size, 100, 100. You have to do all this kind of calculation. Well, where is the, final coordinate going to be? Where is the center going to be? You're always going to know because you're moving the origin. So when you look at examples, if you see this, don't get frightened. At first, it's kind of weird to understand, but translate is actually really useful. Now, what I didn't include in this presentation is there's actually also rotate, which rotates this origin by angle measurement in radians. So you can also imagine translating this origin along and also rotating it to be able to create these really complex shapes very quickly. So there's this question kind of comes up, or this kind of thought comes up when you're doing this, is like, okay, if I keep moving around my origin, how am I going to know, you know, where things are? Like, how am I going to ever keep track of what is going on? So there are these really handy functions called push matrix and pop matrix, which are kind of, if you actually read what they do, it's much more complicated than what the actual pragmatic use of them is. So what push matrix does is it saves your current coordinate system, your current origin, whichever angle, you know, location, displacement it is, right? And it saves that to a stack, right? So it just basically remembers what your coordinate system is. And then you can change it, do some crazy things, right? And then if you call pop matrix, it'll actually return you back to that original coordinate system. So with this, you can do some pretty crazy things very kind of, you know, blindly, and then just, you know, return back to your original coordinate system. So in this code example here, we're creating a line segment of at this location with a particular angle, right? So we save the current coordinates. We move our coordinate system to some other, we move our origin to some other place in terms of x and y. We rotate our coordinate system in terms of an angular measure, right? And then we can just create a line by going from 0, 0 to how long we want it to be. Right? And it's a very simple way to create a line instead of having to do all those calculations about, okay, well, what is my final, sine, cosine, you know, tan, whatever stuff. You can just rotate it, and then just it'll print out based on your new coordinate system. So this is a really cool thing about processing, is you can change completely the way you view your canvas. You can actually do this in three dimensions. That's what I'll show you at the end. I keep talking about this, but it's really the cool stuff about this. And then pop matrix will get me back to the original coordinate system. So if I call this from the draw function, this will actually draw me one of these segments, and then nothing will actually be changed in terms of the coordinate system in the draw function itself. So mouse interaction is also a pretty cool way in which to interact with what you've drawn and to change the way that things are drawn in processing. There are these other global variables that sort of come with your program, just like width and height, and they are mouse x and mouse y, which are quite self-explanatory. And I believe that these are always with respect to the origin, although I'm not sure. But I think it's always with respect to the original 0, 0. But what's cool with mouse is you can actually do distance, which will actually calculate the Cartesian distance between two points. So you can have programs that are affected by how close a mouse is to a particular object. So I have an example of that also, which I'll load up shortly. So if we just quickly go through the code, this code is actually shorter, and I probably should have shown first. So I create, basically setup is the same as in any other application. I create a background, and this is actually a good example of printing things out to the debug window. So I printed these out to debug this. So if you do print and then whatever value, it'll output to that debug window at the bottom. So basically what I do is I create I loop through the entire width in intervals of 20, right? So if it's a for loop and I increase by 20 each time it goes through. And I create a float, which is the distance between the mouse and the current location I'm at. So for each of these points in the draw window, right, I create a size, right? I calculate out a size. And I do some math on the size to create a sort of, you know, a value that's more closer to what I want. And then I draw a circle there of the size that I want. So the way circles are drawn is with ellipse. The first two are the x and y coordinates, and the second two are sort of like, you can do it with polar coordinates, but the way it's done now is just width and height of the ellipse. So you can create squashed things, and you can create elongated things, and so forth. So what this ends up creating in very few lines of code, which I'll just run right now, is, let me bring it over. So these circles are redrawn every time draw is called, right? Everything's redrawn. But the circles are actually drawn based on where my mouse is within this image. So, moving around the mouse, you can see there's a bit of flicker if I keep start moving it very quickly. But on the whole, things are really, really quick. So that shows how, you can use things like mouse distance and so forth to change how things are drawn in your display. Yep.
Can you also use this to measure distance between two objects instead of just the mouse and an object?
Yeah. So if we actually look back on, sorry, I don't have the actual presentation screen on my laptop here. So distance, right, is just calculates distance out for any two points. And then in this particular, I'm using the input of mouse X and mouse Y. So if you save where you're drawing, for example, a rectangle, and you save where you're drawing something else, you can use this. The problem is, I don't think there's a function for, because everything you're drawing is in terms of just, spitting paint out, it's kind of, you'd have to do the actual calculation out, is, the edge of my rectangle, less than, 20 pixels away from the edge of my triangle, you actually have to,
Because they're not actual objects, entities, they're just,
Yeah, it's just, what you've spit out on this, canvas. So if you stick around right after this, I'm teaching the ActionScript seminar, which actually goes through a very object-oriented, very different approach to visualization. But both have their pluses, their advantages, and their disadvantages. So I'm going to kind of go quickly through a few more slides because I'm kind of running out of time. Mouse pressed is another kind of global variable. It's a signal of whether or not the mouse is being pressed. So you can just ask, if mouse pressed, yes or no, and that'll actually check whether the mouse is down or the mouse is up. Mouse clicked is a function. It's kind of like a function that's given with processing. And if you set this function, it just gets called. You don't have to set any listeners, anything like that. This is actually called when the mouse is clicked. And there are also other functions that have to deal with the mouse, such as mouse drag, etc. So you don't actually have to worry about creating listeners for these. You can just do what you want when this happens. And so for example, you can, when the mouse is clicked, you can calculate, okay, what is the distance between, to create a button, right? You calculate, is the distance between the mouse and my particular, center of my circle less than the radius of the circle? And if it is, do something, change the button's properties, start another function, something like that. So in processing, it's kind of like, as you kind of seen, it's kind of tedious, right? If you want to just do everything out manually, if you want to just kind of draw, I want to draw like a picket fence. I'm not going to go through and do like every single line, specify every single line as an offset and so forth. So you can actually create objects, which allow you to manipulate multiple primitives together. So you can create functions for each individual object. You can call individual objects and have them do things. And so you can think of it kind of like a struct that can contain functions, if you're used to thinking in C. And you actually need to declare a new class to create create object. So the cool thing about objects is if you have like a big group of them, you can store them in... Sorry, I keep doing this. You can store them in arrays and actually do things on every single object just like really quickly without having to go through individually and change things. So the way you do an object is you create a new tab, in the processing IDE by going here and saying new tab. You declare a class called myObject. This is basically like a wrapper for like what this object will have, like all of the different properties that this object will have. And basically the two important things, the only thing you really need is a constructor. So this is a function with the same name as your object, right? And whatever you can actually, whatever you want to actually pass to this object. So if I want to create like a, you know, happy face at some sort of location, things I might want to know are like, you know, where do I put it, how large do I want it, so forth. So when I actually call this constructor function, that actually sets the parameters, like sets the initial values for this object, which can then be changed, elsewhere. So these are the sort of object variables. These live within this object, are not seen elsewhere, right? They're within this class itself, right? But I can set them by calling this constructor function. That will initialize this object. But that won't actually draw anything. This doesn't actually draw anything because I haven't created one or anything like that. So if I actually, notice the new tab. Yeah, and you can actually create multiple of these, but it doesn't matter. You can have multiple constructors. So you can have one with a lot of parameters, or you can have another one that has no parameters and just sets it to like a default. So you can set a default, or you can just change them yourself. But then if you actually go to your function, right, your object is kind of like a variable. It's kind of like a struct. So we declare a new one, right, and then so we create a new one. Because it's an object, we use the new command, right? And this is our size, and this is our actual location. And then in our draw function, right, this will create a new one. It sets those initial parameters, but it doesn't actually know what to do with it yet, right? So in the actual function, the draw function, we set the background to black, and then we actually display this particular object. So if we see in that object what display does, this is something that we've created, right? This will actually change the fill color, create a rectangle, and then based on where the mouse is, create either a white or a gray ellipse inside of that. So this sort of emphasizes how objects are much more modular. So let me actually show this demonstration. So we've created this object, right? This is the actual object I've created is this this rectangle with a gray sphere inside. We can actually look at the code at the same time, right? And so display, I'm calling display every time the draw function runs, right? And then I can calculate, inside of this display, I calculate where the mouse is based, right? And then I change the fill color based on that. So this object has some primitive interactivity now. But if I wanted to, for example, create two objects, it's very quick, and you'll see that they have the same sort of properties independently of one another. Oops. So I'll just do this very quickly, hopefully. So I'll just change its size to half of what it was, and I'll put it somewhere else. And then I have to actually call that one's display function as well. You can imagine putting all of this in a loop, which would be quite simple. So now
we have to call it R2, right?
Oh yeah, whoops. Good point. So now, I've done the actual, it's not that pretty, but you see I've created two objects that are sort of the same. They're both instances of this rectangle and circle thing I've created, right? But they now are completely separate. And they both have their independent functionality. So I don't have to worry about drawing out that function for each thing. I can just create one of these new objects and perform their independent functions separately on them. So that's objects. And just as a note, you can read a lot more about all of these things on the processing website. They have very good examples. I've drawn from actually a bunch of them on this. So just an overview, if you create an object, you have to like declare it at first, just like a normal variable. You have to actually instantiate it because it's an object. And then you can call functions within that object. And you can have whatever you want inside of them. So if you want to actually add like new things to processing, like images, sounds, so forth, you need to do it with Sketch and then add file. So it'll put that in the data folder. It's just sort of the way that the structure works of the actual distribution. So to display images, it's kind of a similar syntax. Like you have to declare it that there's going to be an image first. You actually load the image from your data folder. It's more that's in the data folder. It can't actually access images anywhere else in the file system. And then in your draw function, you'll have to put in that it draws the image out. And then these are its locations. And there's optional size parameters as well. Now for something like this, if you're just displaying images, it might not make sense to have this be loop, right? You could do no loop. Because if you draw the image once and you don't do anything else, there's no point for it to redraw 60 times per second the image. So those are some considerations when drawing images. Oops. As I'd mentioned, as we've seen a few times, arrays are objects. So just like we've created that object of the square and the circle, arrays are kind of created the same way. So you declare them, and then you set them equal to a new array object of a particular size. And there's a lot of really handy functions for arrays. Like you can just add to the end of them I think it's append or add. I forget all the syntax kind of blends together at this point. But you can get the length with the array dot length and so forth. So you can do some you don't have to keep track of in C, for example, how long your array is. You can just do it more in a PHP style where you don't have to actually know those numbers. There's actually a really cool thing from Java in processing called a hash map, which is an array, but instead of being indexed by integers, it's indexed by strings. So for example, if you have like a name and an ID, or like a name and a password, or something like that, you can actually search for it by using this this hash map. So for example, this creates a new hash map. Using put is how you actually add values to hash maps. So for example, your dictionary problem set could have just used this, and it would have been very simple because you just basically add your value and add whether or not it's there. And then to actually get out a value for a particular place in the hash map, you use this get on the hash map. And you can actually index it by that string. So A will be 1 in this case. So one thing you might want to do when you're actually creating these data visualizations or kind of nice little things is actually use numbers that are like real world numbers. Like if you want to create, for example, take a map and figure out populations of different cities and then map out like larger or smaller circles based on those populations, or change the color based on those populations, or so forth, you'll actually have to load real live data. And the way you do that is with load strings. So load strings, and if you have this data file in your data directory, it returns an array of strings, which each string is a particular line in your input file. So this is like, for example, in C or PHP, if you use it fgets for everything, and it creates an array of just those individual lines. So every time there's a new line, it splits it, right? And then if you want to actually get out particular values from each line, for example, if you have a tab-separated values file or a comma-separated values file, you'd use this function called split, which returns another array of strings, this time based on cutting the individual line up based on the delimiter. So if you have tabs, it'll cut them out. And you can actually get at your data that way. So loading them into an array or loading it into a hash map, then you could do things like looking up based on a particular city or something, or a particular country if you're doing a visualization of populations. So this is cool because this is how you can start to interact with other more data processing type environments like PHP, for example, when you do imports and things like that. So this is how you sort of get your data into processing. So this is just an example of importing a tab-separated values file and creating this tab-separated values file actually contains coordinates of individual pixels that I want to turn on, and it basically goes through and turns on the pixels. So as a note, I'll upload this PowerPoint and these example code to the seminar's website. So one way to extend processing is by importing new libraries, and you can download them at the library's website, and you unzip them to your library's directory under processing, and you use sketch import library to add them. And these are really cool. Like, for example, one of them I did on a problem set last year was TreeMap, which basically displays information in smaller and smaller rectangles inside of each other, like size information, things like that. So you can imagine you're, for example, going through your whole file system in your computer, and your entire hard drive is like a big rectangle, and then your your Windows folder is a smaller rectangle within that, and then your system folder is even smaller within it. And you can actually create these things very easily with this library. And these all have pretty good documentation online. So a few of them I'll demonstrate. One cool one is the physics library. And this can be used to create cool like tree things and anything basically you can create with particles and springs and attractions and things like that. So you have things like you have a particle system with gravity and drag. Like, you sort of abstract it away slightly with this system, right? And you advance the simulation with this function called tick, which actually creates like the next round of the simulation. So all that particle system is creating is just calculating out the math based on forces, right? It uses Runge-Kutta, it solves the differential equation and then kind of gives you out math. So it's like pretty, it's pretty cool. And you can create particles with this make particle function, right? And then you can, once you make a few particles, you can add springs between them, right? By joining two different particles together with a string of certain length and strength and damping. And you can also make arbitrary kind of gravitational like attractions between them. Which is also quite useful. And so, for example, this makes a pendulum. So some of these functions are kind of specific to the library. I mean, these are all very specific to the library, but it shows sort of how the power of these libraries is. So, we create a new particle system, we make a new particle, and then we make another particle that's the anchor. We make it fixed, right? Which will actually just cement it into a particular place in the simulation, and then we make a spring joining that with some constants, right? So this will just basically create a simple pendulum, and if in our draw function we call that physics.tick, right, it will actually advance the simulation, and we'll see this pendulum kind of bounce around and eventually come to rest. So that's one example of a cool library that there is. So one thing I'm going to mention, we have like 5 minutes left, so I'll just mention 3D stuff, which is really cool, and I recommend you play with this. When I first figured this out, I was like, oh my god. Never thought this would be kind of so simple in a way. So translate, actually, the thing that sets where your coordinate system is, I'd mentioned that it can translate X and Y, but it can also translate in the Z direction, so sort of in and out of the plane. Now that doesn't really make sense, right? What does it mean that you're coming out of the plane? Well, if you're coming out of the plane and then drawing three-dimensional things, it sort of determines how their perspective changes, right? If you go really deep into the plane and you draw a cube, right, it'll be really small, but if you come out, it'll be really big. So even though your actual display screen, at least today, is two-dimensional, Translate allows you to actually go out and in and draw these primitives in other places. Rotate also. So there's rotate, which just rotates, it's always clockwise with respect to the origin, right? But there's also rotate X, rotate Y, and rotate Z, which will actually change how your origin looks in terms of all three axes. So if you do rotate X, it actually rotates around the X axis like this. You rotate Y, it rotates around the Y axis like this, and Z rotates like this. So with all of these things, once we go to a particular place in this, you know, space that we've created now, we can use, instead of things like rectangle and line and so forth, there are these shape primitives such as box and sphere, right, which are the sort of three-dimensional analogs of those simple shapes. And then one note in doing 3D, as I'd mentioned earlier, when you specify a size, if you're doing 3D, you actually need to specify that we're doing 3D. So you select the renderer to be processing 3D, P3D. It's the third parameter to size, and it actually enables this stuff to happen. So what does this actually look like? We can draw things like this. This is sort of like the most primitive example. It's just we go out you know, a little bit in front of the board, you know, rotate it in a few different directions, and draw this cube out. And if I use this function, if I call this function called lights, it'll just create this sort of ambient lighting that will actually make it look realistic like this. So there's an enormous amount of 3D stuff that's really cool. For example, you can specify, also you can translate and rotate, like, point lighting from different locations, right? And, you know, doing something like a Rubik's Cube or three-dimensional tic-tac-toe or, you know, something like that, very simple if you just, you know, think about what order are things being drawn in. You know, I need to start from the back and draw to the front, these cubes. If you use things like pop matrix and push matrix, right, to save your coordinate systems between drawings, right? And if you are creative with your light sourcing and so forth, you can actually get to very precise things like, you know, drawing individual sides and so forth. So I'll just quickly zoom through. You know, there's another library, SQL library, lets you get data out of a MySQL library, very similar to how PHP does it and MySQL. I just want to emphasize three different resources that are, you know, processing.org, very good. Many examples, a lot of really helpful things. Of these three books, they're all at Cabot, if you're interested. I actually have visualizing data if you want to, you know, browse through it. This is kind of like a very, like, beginner-level thing. Like, I think after taking CS50, you might not even, you know, find that useful. This is really cool if you're interested in, like, data sets. If you're like, okay, I have this huge Excel file of, like, you know, one of the examples is, like, you know, like, milk production across, like, all these different farms, like, all these different parameters, and how do I create, you know, crazy charts with it and, you know, add interactivity and things like that. And this is sort of, so that's written by Ben Fry, who actually is behind the processing project. And Casey Reese and Ben Fry wrote this other book called Processing, Programming Handbook for Visual Designers and Artists, which is sort of like a definitive reference type type volume for this. So yeah, processing.org, and thank you. I hope this is helpful. So. And ActionScript next. So I'll just quickly maybe show you guys. So this is something I did in 171, and it's sort of, if you start, you know, thinking about, like, loading in data and then, you know, altering parameters based on sizes and you know, doing things like sorting arrays and, you know, combining it all together, you can get some pretty interesting, you know, interactive charts. Now this is just like one of the problem sets. So we had a survey of the people in CS171, and you actually can't see it because I'm running such a low resolution right now, but this is how many years have you been programming. So this is like less than one to two, two to three or more. The size of the circle represents how comfortable people thought they'd they were in programming. So, you know, you see, like, people who are, you know, less than 1 year, obviously less comfortable than people than more than 1 year. But then what's interesting is, you know, using all this mouse interactivity and so forth, and using these objects, right, you can actually create this pretty interesting interactivity with this data. So, for example, if I want to see, you know, who the Java users are, well, it's interesting to see Java users are all the people who've done it for more than 3 years. You know, they've probably started in high school, and have been using it for a really long time. But I hope that, you know, following this tutorial, you can sort of see, you know, each of these is an object, right? Each of these has like a certain property that's, you know, and the color represents the primary language of the people, I forgot to mention. So you can see, you know, I create some objects, give them some properties, lay them out according to some sort of sorting in an array, right? And then based on that, you know, I don't have to code in individually, like, okay, if you're above this node, you know, light up. You can just, you know, do it all by yourself. There's some, like, interesting people, like, people have been programming for more than 3 years, really like JavaScript and are into literature. I mean, you get some cool data. But this was all just loaded from a tab-separated values file, so. All right.